Thank you. Thank you. Ananta Kodya Sivinda Ki. This unbound authority of Srila Prabhupada Ki. Premsi Kosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Sriya Dvaita Girardha Srivasari Bhava Bhakti Vinda Ki. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopopina Sama Kanda Radha Kanda Vira Bhava Vinda Ki. Sri Vrindavanda. Sri Navadvipa Dhamma Ki. Bhanga Mayi Ki. Jaya Mayi Ki. Bhakti Devi Ki. Tulsi Devi Ki. Samaveda Bhakti Vinda Ki. All glorious is some of the devotees, all glorious is some of the devotees. All glorious is some of the devotees, all glorious to see Sri Gauranga Thakur.
Just come back from Vrindavan, yes? Did you see His Holiness Giriraj this morning? Yes? Wow. So fortunate. He's okay?
He's okay. I'm not okay.
You're okay.
I'm okay. With a broken heart.
Yeah. So even who's that crying? Madhu also has a broken heart. But we can't cry like that. But that wasn't a serious cry. This is attention wanting. It's almost like singing. Almost. I think I'm going to need more light than this. With all due respect.
It's nice to see.
Huh?
It's nice to be able to see.
Yeah, everyone's. Just imagine if we could really see things as they are. Oh, God, it's you. I didn't know who it was back then because it wasn't enough light. Did you have a nice time in Vrindavan?
Wonderful. And magical.
Yeah. And did you remain healthy?
Well, as opposed to the usual, we came in sick and went out feeling really well.
On all
the
reverse
of the usual.
But the only problem is you left your heart there.
Yeah. Heart.
Yeah. What to do? You can keep it there. Did you see Krishna Balaram?
Every day.
Did you see Sisi Gaunatai?
Every day.
And Sri Sri Radha Samasunda?
Every day, every morning.
So unique there is. There's a sweetness in the atmosphere that just simply doesn't exist anywhere else. Yes?
Yes, but I found that also in Jhu.
On the beach or in the temple? Oh, you found Radharasa Vihari.
Yeah. In the temple.
There. Yeah. And because, and Prabhupada, he carried that with him, actually, that sweetness wherever he went. That was, in one sense, we could say his secret. Because he carried Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna. So therefore everyone wanted to be with him, be near him. because it was very sweet. But he was very strong too. He really wanted, he had specific services that he wanted done. It wasn't just bathe in the sweetness. It was, he had a mission, a very big mission. He wanted to make everyone in the universe Krishna conscious. That's a very big mission. And he made the devotees work very hard. And such a surrendered devotee like His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, the austerities that he did, he performed in those, the devotees who went to India very early, performed it in unimaginable to us at this point, practically speaking. Okay. Now we're going to hear something about Krishna. There's one lecture in perhaps in 1966 or 1967 where Prabhupada's talking about Vrindavan, very, very early days. And he said, I'm saying how much he missed Vrindavan. But he said, but still I have come on the order of my spiritual master because it is my duty. But he was saying how much he missed Vrindavan. Does he have the hiccups? Yeah? How cool.
How cool.
Which one is that? I can't.
Jaya.
Does he smile when he hiccups?
Lady Jaya.
Does he smile? Or is he very serious when he hiccups?
She's serious.
Oh. Okay. Even when she hiccups. Okay. Now, we'll get very serious because we're going to speak about the fortunate people of Mathura, because they have the opportunity to see Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys as they're going through the streets of Mathura. And Krishna has just killed the washerman. Krishna very politely asked him, Dehi, please give me the clothes. The washerman was carrying the king's clothes. That was a very, very bold thing that Krishna did. He asked him for those clothes, and the washerman, he immediately became angry. Basically, he said, who do you think you are? These clothes are the property of the king, and you are just a village boy who wanders in the mountains and the fields, and you want to wear, you better go immediately before the king finds out and kills you. So Krishna, at that point, killed him. Now, we spoke about yesterday some of the reasons why it wasn't bad, but it was wonderful that Krishna killed him. Because everything that Krishna does, in fact, is wonderful. He is the transcendental, supreme personality of Godhead. But sometimes we think that perhaps Krishna overreacted, because we're thinking that if I was in that position and someone insulted me, and as a reaction to his insulting me, I killed him, what kind of consciousness must I have? And it's true. It's true. If I were to do something like that, basically imitative of Krishna, it would show a very low consciousness. But everything that Krishna does is transcendental. We use that word transcendental, and it means beyond. But how do we understand what is beyond basically our own consciousness when all our experience is only of our consciousness and the good and bad of this world. So for us to imitate Krishna, for us to disregard the morality of this world is not proper, because these rules and regulations of this world are meant to elevate our consciousness so we can approach transcendence. But Krishna is transcendence. He is transcendence. When we say transcendental, what does transcendental mean? In one word. Beyond, that would be the word that I would use. Beyond what? Yes, the material realm, which means goodness, passion, ignorance. So we are trying to transcend, go beyond the forces that control everyone. Krishna became angry, but his anger is transcendental. It is not touched by the modes of material nature. This is very, not difficult, but it's impossible for us to conceive of. But to show us that Krishna was extraordinary, or is extraordinary, and in his action, he acted extraordinary, not like an extraordinary, he was beyond what an ordinary person's consciousness was. How did he kill him? With his fingertips. He chopped off his head with his fingertips. Because angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. Every part of Krishna's body is transcendental. It's unlimited. It's beyond the limitations of everything of this world. So Krishna can see with his hands. He can kill with his fingertips. He can impregnate all the living entities and time with all the karma of all in existence into the material realm with his glance. He eats with his eyes. He drinks with his ears. So Krishna is transcendental. He's beyond the material world. So for us to impose what we think is right and wrong upon Krishna and say he shouldn't act like that, it shows our ignorance of what we mean by Krishna, by the word God, by the word transcendental. It shows that we actually don't understand the concepts that are required to understand Krishna. And therefore, in the Bhagavatam, this 10th canto is presented after the 9th canto, which is presented after the 8th canto. So first canto, second canto, third canto. So different concepts and purifications are added to what we're learning, one canto after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next, so that by the time we open the 10th canto and read this part, we understand this is amazing, this is wonderful, that Krishna, he's unlimited and he's a person, and yet he acts. And how does he act? He acts in a way that superficially imitates the actions of humans. But everything he does has nothing to do with the activities of humans. The engine, that's yours. No? Everyone, does everyone have George Harrison as their ringtone? It's like the newest fad. Okay. But usually we recommend that during the classes either we place our phones on cow moo tones. Peacocks are acceptable. Or we can put it on silent mode, something like that. So Krishna is completely transcendental, and everything he does is wonderful, and he's the param satyam dhimahi, he's the absolute truth, the absolute good upon whom the whole Bhagavatam meditates upon. And everything he does is good for everyone he acts for, because he's absolutely good, fully good. So this is wonderful. And like when the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha heard that her children were going to be powerful asuras, powerful but demonic personalities, she was sad. But when she heard that they would be killed by the Supreme Lord, she became happy. Because only good can come from that, they would be benefited. So Krishna took the clothes that he wanted after killing the washerman, and all the friends of the washerman ran far away as fast as they could. And Krishna and Balaram took garments that especially pleased them, and they gave the rest of the clothes to their friends, and then they just left everything in the street, scattered on the ground. So on one hand, the washerman said, was told by Krishna, Krishna told the washerman that if you give me these clothes, of course it's an unusual request, because they're the king's clothes, but if you give them to me, you'll get great benefit, greatest benefit. And so if we give to Krishna what's actually Krishna's, ultimately is Krishna's, we get such benefit. And if we don't, whatever we've accumulated in this world remains scattered on the ground. It's gone with time. As Prabhupada said once, or not Prabhupada said, it's in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the opening chapters, there's a description of the different kings of Kali Yuga. And one of the characteristics of the kings is naturally they're worried about succession. What does succession mean? The continuation of the dynasty. What will have? Who will I pass the kingdom to when I leave? So there's a comment by it's either in the verses or one of the acharyas or the BBT commentators have said that they're so worried about who will I pass my kingdom to when I leave, but they don't know where they're going. For all the terrible acts that they've committed, they're going to a terrible place. And yet, they're worried about who they're going to pass the kingdom to, as if it's really theirs. It's their most prized possession, and they're going to that place that rhymes with swell. And it's not a nice place. Yeah, hell. Yeah. And the weather is terrible. It's quite hot. One time Prabhupada, when in the very, very early days, Prabhupada was in New York and going to some program uptown in Manhattan. So they didn't have any cars or anything like that, and no one really knew how to treat Prabhupada anyway, how to treat such an elderly gentleman from such a different culture. So they went on the subway. And one of the devotees, perhaps Brahmananda, who said to Prabhupada, "This is just like hell, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "No, in hell there's no electricity." So no fans, no ACs, it's really difficult. But it's so much to do with consciousness, because when we think of what heaven is, higher places and lower places, we think of the miseries or the pleasures of this world. We think here in this world I have to pay for petrol, so in heaven petrol is free, or it's very inexpensive, or something like that, or the so much as you can eat as much as you want, and you don't have stomach doesn't get full or something like that. But it's not exactly on that level. That the it's just material pleasure that's unending, the pleasures of earth. That it's everything is the upper planets are more and more and more and more subtle. And that's why one has to be purified to go to the upper planets and enjoy subtle delights. Because gross delights are gross, they're always on the, and yeah, they're not refined at all. But in, so one has to have the right consciousness to go to the upper planets and enjoy heavenly delights. It's actually consciousness. It's a different realm, practically speaking. What to speak of the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, see the things that Krishna does. He's playing a musical instrument. He's taking care of cows. He's wandering in the beautiful forest. And one could think that this is, oh, I know what that's like. But it's nothing to do with that. It's a completely different realm because it's a completely different consciousness. And even with the consciousness that we have now, if we enter into a place like Vrindavan or stand in front of Radharasa Bihari in the right consciousness of Juhu, or stand in front of Krishna Balaram Radharasama Sunda, or walk around Vrindavan or see Giriraj Govardhan, that the consciousness, the sweetness of the consciousness is just different. It affects what to speak if we have actual, pure Krishna consciousness. So the consciousness that gives us access to the spiritual realm of Goloka Vrindavan is different than the consciousness that gives us access to even the spiritual realm of Vaikuntha, of where Krishna is worshipped as Lord Narayan in the mood of with reverence and awe. So the consciousness of Vrindavan is a special flavor of bhakti. It's a special flavor of bhakti that has a special, you could say, sweetness or fragrance to it that's so captivating. So when one goes to Vrindavan, Vrindavan is like, if we take, we can make this into a true teaching demonstration here, but we will need some assistance. You have to, and Hemi, you do it on that side because I'm feeling a little too old to stand up all of a sudden. You hold this end, and you hold this end. And in front of the deities, go in front of the deities. One layer only. Just go right, put it right next to the deities.
Like this?
Yeah, exactly. So can you see the deities?
No.
Well, that's because you're sitting over there.
But
I'm stuck here.
Can you sort of see through?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Vrindavan is like. You can perceive just behind the curtain because the layer, the covering over the spiritual world is quite thin in Vrindavan. So the sweetness sort of pours through. Is that true? Oh, you won't admit it. Okay. Okay.
I'm working on it.
Oh, you're working at it. Okay, well, I'll ask myself. Yeah, so nice. Okay. It's a thin veil, that's what Prabhupada called it. Thank you. You've done very well.
Thin veil of Maya.
Huh?
Thin veil of Maya.
Well, yes. A covering, a thin covering. Have you been to New York? Yeah. When you go to Vrindavan, does it feel like New York? Okay. It's different. Okay. There's some devotees have those, not devotees, but people have I Love New York t-shirts. And then they have I Left My Heart in New York t-shirts. Then they have I Left My Heart in Vrindavan t-shirts. And now they have I Left My Glasses in Vrindavan t-shirts. A picture of a monkey on the back. Raise your hand if you've had your glasses stolen in Vrindavan by monkeys. 50% of your life is wasted.
Three times,
huh?
There's the clogs option as well.
The what?
The clogs, the
shoes. Okay, raise your hand if you've had your shoes stolen in Vrindavan by monkeys, by humans. But everyone had shoes. So where were we? We were talking about something about Krishna, and he killed the washerman, and when he does something, it's perfect. But now, Krishna has clothes. And whose clothes are they? They're Kamsa's clothes. But actually, they were new, because he wouldn't wear Kamsa's remnants. They were new clothes. But Kamsa was a huge and powerful asura. And Krishna was a delicate boy. So even though he took them, there needed to be some adjustments made. So Krishna walked further. It says he put on pairs of garments that especially pleased them. They left some scattered on the ground. And thereupon a weaver came forward. So sometimes it's vayak, a weaver, or sometimes translated as a tailor, came forward. And feeling affection for the lords, nicely adorned their attire with cloth ornaments of various colors. So such a difference in mood between the washerman and this weaver, this vayaka. So soon as he saw Krishna and Balaram, he felt affection for them. And he adorned their attire with cloth ornaments. And in the purport here it says, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the weaver adorned or covered the Lord with cloth armlets and earrings, cloth armlets and earrings, because there was going to be a wrestling match. So he wanted armlets, but he couldn't have metal, because that wouldn't work when you're fighting and pushing each other. So there were soft cloth, the armlets that were given. And the word anurupataha indicates that the colors match nicely. As we said, Krishna is a very fine dresser. He likes to dress just right. So this is the personality, the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, why does Krishna like to dress nicely, and his devotees, some of them like to dress nicely, but in, like the Goswamis, they were dressed like poverty-stricken mendicants or beggars. They acted as to show that they were detached from matter. And yet Krishna is dressing in such a wonderful way. This is his personality. He's a person. A person means specific qualities. You like this, you don't like that. So Krishna has things that he really, really likes. He likes the sound of the flute. And he plays his flute in such a way that every living entity, upon hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, is moved and touched to the core of their heart. And when calves, who are drinking from their mother cow's milk, hear the sound of their flute, they're stunned. And they stop drinking. and the milk just dribbles from their mouths, and their ears raise high, and the ears become like cups, as if they were want to catch the liquid nectar coming from the flute of Krishna. So Krishna likes the flute. And Srimati Radharani plays a veena, which is considered the most perfect sounding of all instruments. The tones on the veena are considered, the tones are hit perfectly on a veena, and it's a kachapi veena, which means it's made out of a turtle shell. And Krishna likes, his dhoti is like this, and he likes, even though he has so many jeweled decorations, the decorations he likes most come from the forest of Vrindavan. So these are all transcendental tastes, because the forest flowers and the minerals of Vrindavan, these are the loving offerings of the devotees. This is the offering of the fruit of their existence, so to speak. Like certain trees give certain specific flowers, and those flowers have fragrance, and the whole existence is to produce these fragrant flowers. So the perfection of their existence and their ecstasy is when those flowers are taken by Krishna and placed on one ear, or sometimes the cowherd boys take them and put them on Krishna, or the gopis will string a garland of those flowers and present it to Krishna. And the grass is perfection when Krishna walks upon it with his soft and tender lotus feet. So then they feel, yes, I have made my offering to Krishna with so devotionally offered. And the peacocks, they offer their peacock sounds. Any good peacock imitators here? It's a peacock at 2 a.m. after a hard day's work. Are there any peacock imitators here who are in a brave and bold mood? Okay. It'll come out later, I'm sure. And they also, peacocks are famous for their dancing. Raise your hand if you've seen a peacock dance.
In your movie.
Huh?
In your movies, yes.
Oh, that one slideshow. How about in real life? Yeah. Where did you see one? Where did you see a peacock dance?
There are ones in the airport. Where are
you? Oh, just dancing?
Yes.
They spread their feathers, and then they take their feathers and they shake it. They shake it, it makes a sound like the rustling of peacock feathers. And it makes this sound like that. And when one offers a peacock feather fan, that's a nice way to offer it. Just reminding the one who we're offering it to of the peacocks of Vrindavan who are dancing. So that's the perfection of their existence, to dance to Krishna's flute playing, or to make their peacock sounds in the rainy season especially. So every living entity, you mentioned, has some unique perfection that they can offer to Krishna, and that, when offered with love, is the full satisfaction of the soul. So the weaver, as soon as he saw Krishna, his bhakti, the flavor, that sweet flavor of bhakti arose in his heart, and he immediately adorned Krishna with nice ornaments of various colors, and they were perfectly matched, because Krishna is such a fine dresser. He likes cows. He likes peacock feathers. When the peacocks offer their feathers to him by dancing, he takes the feathers and places him with like with great respect to the to his head and in his crown. So Krishna and Balaram, being wearing these fine clothes, decorated with matching colors and ornamented by the tailor, the weaver, they looked resplendent. So they looked so beautiful, each in his own unique, wonderful, ornamented outfit, because Krishna and Balaram prefer different colors. Balaram, as all the pictures show, he likes blue, which perfectly matches his whitish skin, and Krishna's darkest skin, transcendentally darkest skin, he likes the color of yellow, dotis, as we see, for the golden yellow, like a flash of lightning. So pleased with the weaver, they resembled a pair of young elephants, one white and the other black, decorated for a festive occasion. Pleased with the weaver, the Supreme Lord Krishna blessed him that after death he would achieve the liberation of attaining a form like the Lord's, and that while in this world he would enjoy supreme opulence, physical strength, influence, memory, and sensory vigor. In other words, he wouldn't become old, and then when he finally left this world, he would attain a form, because he made Krishna's form so beautiful and he was meditating on that form. He would attain a form that resembled Krishna's own form. And then, so now Krishna because he's going to the wrestling arena to fight with the wrestlers, that's going to be the next day. Excuse me for a second. So Krishna always wants to look just right. So he has his wonderful clothes on, and the next thing he wants, he requires to look wonderful in the culture, he wants a most wonderful flower garland that he'll wear it to the arena. So the two lords then went to the house of the garland maker, Sudama. So Krishna, when he sees the ladies in Mathura, then he sees the Brahmins, then he sees a washerman, then he sees a tailor, then he sees a garland maker. And most of these people aren't of the highest class even. But this dealing with Sudama is very special. Because this Sudama, he used to go every day. This is described by perhaps Srila Jiva Goswami or Bhishma Chakravarti Thakur. He would go every day to Vrindavan to pick the very special flowers that are grown only in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, they really do have some special flowers. And especially in the very hot season, you get these incredibly fragrant, trying to think of the names. One is called Jui, another is called something else. But very super, super sweet and fragrant flowers. So he would go to Vrindavan to pick these very, very special flowers that only were grown in Vrindavan. And then, while he was in Vrindavan picking flowers, he saw cows. And he saw the cows were taken care of by these cowherd boys. And he saw that the head of these cowherd boys were Krishna and Balaram. So he would go so often to Vrindavan to pick flowers, and he would so often see Krishna and Balaram. And he developed a friendly relationship with Krishna. And because Krishna had a friend whose name was Sudam, because this florist, this garland maker, Mali, was called Sudam, when you have a friend who has a... If you have a friend who is very, very close to you, and then you meet someone else by that name, naturally there is an affinity. So because Sudama was seeing Krishna every day, herding the cows in Vrindavan, and he would talk a little bit to him, and because his name was Sudama, they developed a very affectionate relationship. So when Krishna was walking through the districts of Mathura, he came to a precinct, an area, that he understood, oh, Sudama must live here. And then the Lord went to the house of the garland maker Sudama. And as soon as Sudama saw them, Krishna and Balaram, he at once stood up. Out of great respect, that's considered respectful. Even though the next thing he did was bow down, subserviate himself, offer obeisances, bow, I am your servant. But first he stood up. So to stand up and then bow down. This is very respectful. So he at once stood up and then bowed down, and he placed his head on the ground. After offering them seats, please come into my house, and bathing their feet, Sudama worshipped them and their companions with argya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, and other presentations. They weren't great, luxurious presentations such as gold and jewels, because he was a humble Mali, a garland maker, but he gave him the best that he had available for them. Because again, Krishna in fact needs nothing from the living entity. But he says, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yo Mbhakta Prayaschati Taraham Bhakta Paritam Aslami. Aslami means when you offer me bhakti, with devotion, with love, as just for my pleasure, doing something, even if it is a leaf, everyone can offer a leaf. A flower, everyone can find a flower and offer, or fruit, or some water. Krishna says, asnami, when it's offered with devotion, when it's, especially if it's grown with devotion, and then tended with devotion, then picked with devotion, and then offered with devotion. Then Krishna says, Asnami Paratatmana, I will accept it, I will take it. I will accept it, I want it. I'm hungry for the offerings that my devotees make with bhakti, with devotion. And on the other hand, if someone offers anything, opulence in any way, Krishna needs nothing. But he's hungry for the devotion of the devotees, of his devotees. So then, so he worshipped them with whatever he had in his house that was suitable. And then Sudama said, there's a few verses, but simple prayers. O Lord, my birth is now sanctified. It is pure. It is holy. And my family, free of contaminations. Now that you both have come here, my forefathers, the demigods and the great sages, are all certainly satisfied with me. This is the perfection of my existence, that you have come to my house and I have the opportunity to serve you. And it's interesting because Akura, who was a relative of Krishna's and a senior relative, his great uncle, I believe, as soon as they got to Mathura, what was the first thing Akura said? Come to my house. And Krishna said, yes, 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 but later. He didn't go. But he went to the house of Sudama out of his causeless mercy. A lowly garland maker. Because you are the well-wishing friends and supreme soul. Oh, this, you two lords are the ultimate cause of the entire universe. So here, so in Krishna's Leela, there's always a mixture of Krishna's pastimes when he does something. And then there are some prayers. And then he'll do something extraordinary. He'll do something that's Naralila, that's human-like, and then someone will offer some prayers showing that he's not at all human, and the performance of human-like activities by someone who is all-powerful like Krishna is the most extraordinary thing. When he's acting as if, when there is nothing to force him to act, he has all his desires are fulfilled already, and he's all powerful and acting. And yet, what does he do? This is the question we would naturally think. And he does things that are, he herds cows, he plays his flute. So this is the most wonderful thing, what the all-powerful will do when he's just doing what he wants to do. But because we may have the tendency to mistake Krishna's activities for ordinary activities, there's this continuous mixture of superhuman activities with his Naralila, with his seemingly ordinary activities, and prayers by devotees who are glorifying Krishna and explaining his all-powerful position. So, Sudama says, you two lords are the ultimate cause of this entire universe. So this is who just walked into his house and he's worshiping with just some scents and sandalwood. The ultimate cause of the entirety of the universe. Now try to fit that into your mind and brain. Just, you might have to, could you open the window a little bit and we'll let some air, and also we can also look in the sky and see if we can see 10,000 stars in the sky. And if we see stars, then we, because we usually live in this very small world of our minds, and we tend to walk into walls and things like that, and forget that the rest of the world exists. And but it's huge. Material reality is endless, practically speaking. Endlessly vast and endlessly minute as well. And Krishna is the cause of all of that. And there he is, walking the streets of Mathura or herding the cows. Unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly full of knowledge. And there he is, playing a flute, stealing butter. So the pastimes Krishna performs in Vrindavan are so mysterious, and they are the most wonderful and most filled with sweetness, because this is just how Krishna wants to act. With no other reason to act except this is the way I want to be. So you are the ultimate cause of the entire universe. To bestow sustenance, maintenance, and prosperity upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions completely. So Krishna is so powerful, and this comes out in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto when he's dealing with Lord Brahma, that and Brahma, who is so most intelligent in the universe, he is shocked when he sees that from Krishna has expanded, from this little beautiful boy has expanded unlimited forms, that each of those unlimited forms have unlimited power. Unlimited forms come from Krishna, and each of those unlimited forms have unlimited power. And although these unlimited forms come from Krishna, Krishna's power doesn't get even the slightest bit smaller. So how powerful is unlimitedly powerful? Brahma could not fathom it. He was just, he fainted. Because he wanted to test Krishna, to see how powerful Krishna was. But when he got the smallest glimpse of what unlimited power was from Krishna, small glimpse, he became stunned and fell to the ground. So you have descended to bring prosperity. He descended with your plenary expansion. Because you are the well-wishing friends and supreme soul of the whole universe, of every living entity in the universe, you regard all with unbiased vision. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya tatesu chapyaham. Although I am equal to everyone still, because my devotees reciprocate with me in a special way, I reciprocate with them in a special way. So your devotees' loving worship, you reciprocate your although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. Please order me, he said. Please order me, your servant, to do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. There's a whole book of instructions in that. This is what's actually fortunate in this world, is to have some service to do. And I've seen, I know quite a few devotees who they were serving in ISKCON and had wonderful positions, and due to fate or fortune or this or that, they left. They had to leave. But after speaking to them years later, the thing that they missed most was service. Because, and I know for myself, I tend to take it for granted, but service to Krishna and Krishna's devotees and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Prabhupada is so fortunate, and it brings so much satisfaction to the heart. So please order me, let me do some service. That's what he was begging for, and that's the one meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. Please allow me to serve you, this is all I want. Please allow me to serve you. Please allow me to serve you. Sincerely, that request is the essence of what Krishna consciousness is, from the beginning platform to the highest advanced platform. It's just wanting to serve Krishna out of the highest platform in a very, very specific way, but with great love for Krishna's pleasure. That kind of service, not like work, but an offering of the self, of the soul. So he made this request to Krishna while Krishna was in his house. And here's how Krishna replied. Sukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Brigid, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand what Krishna and Balaram wanted. He understood it. Thus, with great pleasure, he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers. So Krishna had his fancy clothes with his cloth armbands suitable for wrestling matches, and now he had the most wonderful garland around his neck, fragrant like anything. And he was getting ready for the great wrestling match the next day. So beautifully adorned with these garlands, Krishna and Balaram were delighted. And so were their companions. The two lords then offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them, whatever benedictions he desired. So they said to him, whatever you want, I will give you. Whatever it is in your heart of hearts, I will give you. So again, this contrast is set up between the washerman and the surrendered devotees. Even the weaver, who is not described much, a contrast is given up. So this isn't that so Krishna can get whatever he wants, and if you give him what he wants, you get whatever you want, and if you don't give him what he wants, he cuts your head off. It's not like that, because what he wants is the devotion of the offering. Because after all, a garland of flowers, does the sustainer and creator and maintainer of the entire universe, does he really need a garland of flowers, no matter how nice the flower garland is? Does he really need some water and some flowers or a leaf or a piece of fruit, an apple? No, but when someone offers these things, simple as they are, in devotion, asnami bharatam, I accept it, Krishna says. So it is the devotion. So Sudama, what is he going to choose? Now there's a lot to be said about this, but we're moving onward in time, and I want to leave some, I wanted to finish and then ask if there's any questions. But maybe tomorrow I'll speak a little of some of what about what he asked for. So there's two verses, what he asked for and then what Krishna gave him. So he asked for unshakable devotion for Krishna. And unshakable devotion for Krishna, the soul of all existence. Friendship with his devotees. Devotion for Krishna and friendship with the devotees. And transcendental compassion for all living beings. Bhuteshu cha dayam param. Love for Krishna, friendship with the devotees, and compassion for all living beings. Very complete. That was his desire. He could have asked for anything, and this is what he asked for. He didn't ask for a new computer, a new bicycle, or even a what?
iPhone.
An iPhone. There's a new one coming out, by the way, very soon. iPhone 10. No, I don't know what. So his desire, and he was simple too, very simple. So, how did Krishna reciprocate with that? Not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, he gave him what he wanted, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Just for one garland, one or two garlands, a good deal, yeah? But it wasn't that. And it's not that we're being taught, see, you look what happens. Again, it's not, if you don't give to Krishna, see what happens to you. If you do give to Krishna, you get so much more than, even if you only ask for something pure like that, you'll get everything you always really wanted anyway. No, it's all a matter of actually devotion. And Krishna is reciprocating with this very simple and loving devotion that Sudama presented him these garlands with. And he's in a very, very generous, wonderful way. It's then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. So they left. And they moved on to the next part of their adventure, which we'll hear tomorrow. And that is, and he's moving towards the wrestling arena. The wrestling match will happen the next day, but he's going to deal with who knows who he sees next. Kulja. Yeah. Okay, we'll end here. Any questions? We have a Well, actually, we should sing too. But are there any questions? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, can you explain how chanting the Maha Mantra is not only a prayer for service, but service in itself?
What's using the tongue in Krishna service and the ear in Krishna service, and when one's dancing, the body is being used in Krishna service. This is how Prahlad Maharaj defines what devotional service is. The nine angas, the nine parts of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, that is devotional service. It's Krishna's pleasure. It's for Krishna's pleasure. It's no different from Krishna, and it's done for Krishna's pleasure. No? Yes? This is what Shastra describes also. Not only is it simple. Yeah,
because sometimes we think that service is only like physical...
Work.
Yeah.
Hard work. Avodah kasha. Yes? I remember that from... That's the only word almost I remember from Hebrew school. Because it was such hard work being there. Is that a regular Hebrew word?
Yes.
And because we are also getting pleasure from chanting, so sometimes there is the feeling that it's not really service. It's like, for me, not for Krishna.
But you'll get pleasure from using your body in Krishna service too. But we can't chant all day long. That's the reality of the situation. That's a very exalted stage of consciousness. And in Krishna consciousness, there is no imitation. We shouldn't imitate the exalted devotees. So Prabhupada did say, one time he taught His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj, that I've created all these other things because you can't chant continuously. But there's more to it than that too. Prabhupada was very interested in compassionately spreading Krishna consciousness and transcendental knowledge all over the world. But yet this is the most wonderful service, just chanting Krishna's names, hearing about Krishna. What Parikshit Maharaj, look what he did. He gave up the wonderful hard work of ruling a kingdom, which he was doing as a pure devotee for Krishna's service, to do what? To sit and hear about Krishna.